Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, March 29th, 2017. And with me today, I have Kelly Gumont. And how are you, Kelly?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you?
I am great. And also with us today, Jeff Butts. How are you, Jeff?
Fantastic. It's hump day.
So it is. So
Mike,
it
Mike,
is.
Mike.
Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Elgato's Eve Energy HomeKit compatible smart switch.
Yay!
That's pretty awesome. Yeah, yay is totally right. Hey, we have interesting stuff to talk about, or so I think. And I think the first thing we should dive into is this tenuous report that Apple is taking the Touch ID sensor that's built into the home switch for the iPhone 8 model and putting it on the back of the phone.
And, yeah, right.
And that's today's show. No.
There you go. So, now I've weighed in as well.
So for those of you that haven't read my article yet about what I think on this, here's the backstory. So there's this supposedly a source inside Foxconn passed information on to someone who then gave it to a site called
a boffin.
Yes.
Many boffins died bringing this information to us.
Yes, and sadly, I think that their deaths were in vain.
Yeah.
So,
well, here's my question, because
okay.
I saw the email too. And, you know, granted, I'm a relatively new kid on the block, but consider the source. I've never heard of these guys before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have good information, because
no, it doesn't.
But I mean, when we have a report that's this tenuous and is out there, like, and when I say out there, I mean like out of the mainstream reports of of what we're expecting from the new iPhone, then it helps a lot if you have an established track record, and these guys don't, and that could change over time, but right now they don't, and I think they're wrong. I think this report is wrong. I think that Apple is not moving the Touch ID sensor to the back of the phone. I think that is an inelegant and kludgy solution to a problem that Apple doesn't have to fix this year if they can't make everything work the way they really want.
Well, can we talk for a minute about how I'm not entirely convinced this is even a problem Apple has?
I think we're on the same page here, but fill me in, Kelly. What do you mean?
Well, first of all, this is another logistical issue that comes up because of who I am, which is a person with the hands of a Japanese schoolgirl. So,
and I feel bad for that schoolgirl, because now she can't write
because she has no hands. The concern that I have about this is people like me, who have small hands and bigger phones. Like, if I had a Plus, forget about it. I hold my phone in what I have heard more than one person refer to as the pinky perch.
Oh,
so I don't even know. Yeah. I don't even know if I could physically reach that button with my hand if I were to have a phone. Like, maybe I could do it with I have a 6S, so maybe I could do it with the S, but I don't think I could do it with a Plus. And
right.
So I'm not convinced that, like, however you hold your phone, you can get your thumb to the front pretty easily. And so far, they're not wide enough that most people have a difficulty doing that, regardless of whether you're a pinky perch person or not, or what. And so I'm not convinced this is a problem Apple not only has to solve, but I'm not convinced it's a problem Apple has, because we've seen phones where they did something like this, if I'm not mistaken, and they came and went with the sensor on the back, because I'm not entirely certain you can even still buy a current model of those phones that has a fingerprint sensor on the back, because I think they figured out it doesn't work.
Wouldn't surprise me if you can, but I'm saying this without doing any research whatsoever and basing it on nothing other than the ether flowing around me.
Well, I think that you may be able to buy that model phone, but it's not like it's a recent model. Oh, there okay. have been right. phones it's, released it's since then without release. One. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
I think, so like, I think, you know, like you can buy a two generation back laptop or phone right. or whatever, like they're out there, but newer models have since subsequently been released that do not include this goofball idea. Like people tried it. I'm not convinced it was successful, or we would see more things that had gone that way. Samsung, for example.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, that manufacturer who shall not be named, Samsung.
Yeah.
I think they learned their lesson and stopped doing it.
So yeah. Here's my take. Apple has no need to put a Touch ID sensor on the back of the phone. It limits how you use the phone. It limits which fingers mm-hmm. you can effectively use to yes. to do Touch ID. It puts your hand in the way for the credit card terminals that support Apple Pay that have crappy sensors in them, which is a lot mm-hmm. of them.
Yep.
And it fixes a problem that Apple doesn't really have, which is where do they put that button? So right. if Apple wants to make that go away, then what they can do at their leisure, meaning on their own time frame, they can perfect the technology that they've patented that puts fingerprint sensors inside the glass on the display. So they could have a region on the display that acts as a Touch ID sensor area. And mm-hmm. once they've got that nailed down, now you just make the screen bigger, you have the Touch ID sensor area, and you're good to go. And until then, the Touch ID button on the front of the phone is just fine. And Apple just redesigned this last year. It didn't yeah. feel like a stopgap measure to me.
Yeah.
So, no, I really have played with the new button and really like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot better than I think the six button. The thing that also strikes me about the button and Mr. Gamut, I know you'll be with me on this. It's in the middle. So if you're a right-handed person, it's just as convenient or inconvenient as if you are a left-handed person.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the yeah. things when people talk about moving the sensor, they always talk about, oh, it needs to be in whatever is the opposite corner of the one that I want to use. Because I mostly use my phone with my left hand because I am left-handed. So yeah. that's one of the things that's one of the things that we watch for here at Mac Observer. I know because I know Jeff and I, our first question to Dave Hamilton at the Apple Watch event was, what if you're left-handed? Find out what happens if you're left-handed.
Yes.
Yeah. And
Kelly's not
kidding.
And
I feel like that. No, I'm absolutely not kidding.
I believe
we were getting like texts and it was like, what do you want us to, what do you want to know? What if you're left-handed?
Yeah.
So
well,
I think,
go ahead.
Well, I think that one of the things that Apple really nailed with that interaction is that it's basically the same for everybody. You reach into the middle of your phone and yeah. I don't anticipate that changing. I can see where maybe they would extend the glass down and, you know, sort of swallow up that button. But I don't know that the fundamental form factor of it's at the bottom in the middle is a thing that you would want to change, because regardless of how you hold your phone, that works mm-hmm. for like everyone I know and have seen out in the world who interacts with their phone with one hand or two. It works the same for everybody. I've never seen anybody yeah. have a hard time getting to the bottom, the center of the bottom of the screen right. with whatever finger they need. So
I think if anything, they'll make the whole screen Touch ID compatible.
Oh, that would be nice.
You know, yeah. I would settle for the bottom region when you're holding the phone in portrait mode, but the entire yeah. display would be awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I am declaring this report fakety fake. It is not happening, and and we will know soon enough just how right I am. But am not buying the Touch ID button is moving to the back of the iPhone 8.
Yeah.
Shenanigans.
All right. So we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Elgato's Eve Energy Smart Switch. And this is a HomeKit. Yeah. Yes. Yay. HomeKit compatible plug that you stick into an outlet on your wall, and then you plug in whatever device you want to make smart, and now it's part of your HomeKit setup, so you can control the device, turn it on or off by using Siri on your iPhone or any of the HomeKit compatible apps that you may love. You can even use Elgato's Eve app, which, by the way, is a really good HomeKit controlling app, like really good. And their app works with everything. Unlike so many other HomeKit controller apps, which only work with the manufacturer's own stuff, Elgato totally gets how this works. You want to have everything work together.
Yes.
And so they came up with an app that just does that, and it's free, and it's awesome. And, and the hardware they make is awesome as well. Not free, but awesome. And I have one of the Eve Energy switches, and I love that it was drop-dead simple to hook up. And and I was using it for the air conditioner in the summer. I repurposed it in the winter for another device. And it was funny because there was a warm day, and my apartment got too warm. And so then I had this other light just randomly turning on and off, and I couldn't figure out what's going on. It's because I hadn't switched what I was associating my Eve Energy switch with. So when it got warm enough,
let me air condition you. Light comes on.
Exactly. And it took me like a whole afternoon before I realized what was going on. And, but anyhow, so the point is it's a crazy reliable switch. It, it does everything that I need it to do. And it's awesome. And I love that I can just sit there and look in my HomeKit management apps. I'll reference Eve app since it's, you know, we're talking about a lot of stuff. But you can look and see what sort of power usage you're getting off the device. So if you're trying to like really watch closely what sort of power usage you have happening in your smart home setup, this lets you do it. It's awesome. So they're just under $50 for one of these switches. They're easy to set up. They're really reliable. And I love mine. And I would love for you guys to check it out and make your gear even smarter. It's an easy way to start playing around with smart home technology and HomeKit. So head over to the Elgato website, elgato.com/TDO, and that's elgato.com/TDO, and you can check out the Eve Energy Smart Switch and Power Meter. It's really awesome, and I'm so glad that Elgato is sponsoring us this week, so thank you very much for that. elgato.com/TDO. Okay.
Cool. Hey, quick question.
Yes.
Does that energy sensor, because so many smart home devices have to work with a hub, does that one?
No, it does not. The way
cool.
Elgato set up their devices, they use Bluetooth and speak directly to whatever it is that you're using to interact with your HomeKit stuff. So your iPhone.
Okay.
The closest you come to having a hub in this setup is if you are remotely controlling devices, meaning when you're off your or when you're actually away from everything.
Right.
In which case, you
need an Apple TV or an iPad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, if you're just controlling stuff locally, it just works. It's pretty cool.
This is the only thing that has successfully worked for me in HomeKit. This is my unsolicited endorsement for all of the complaining I've done about HomeKit. I have an Eve device, and it is literally the only thing that ever was like, hey, I'm in HomeKit now. Here you go. And that was it. And that was all. Like, it did exactly what Tim has said HomeKit is supposed to do all this time. This is the only time I ever had anything HomeKit compatible that actually did that.
Okay.
That's pretty cool.
Cool.
Hey,
I'll tell you horror stories about the other stuff later, Jeff.
Yeah, please.
Oh, yeah. We all have stories we can share. There's one other thing I wanted to talk about real quick before we have to wrap up. And it's Samsung, and it's the Galaxy Note 7. You remember the Explodophone? Got caught on fire, burned people's cars, burned people's bodies, burned people's apartments. It was a bad scene. And I mean, the phones even got banned from FAA or by the FAA from flights, and couldn't even put them in your checked luggage. Nothing. It was like, nope. Can't travel with these, can't do anything with these. Samsung finally had to recall them after trying to replace batteries and doing software updates and telling people, no, really, this time we did fix it. And then something else is on fire. And
yeah.
And so they get all these things back. And now they've announced that they're going to sell them as refurbished Galaxy Note 7 smartphones. And my first thought was, are you serious? You dropped on your head? And
well, my first thought was, are they your neighbors, Jeff, or my neighbors? Now that that's legal in both of the places we live.
Well, I caught your MJ reference.
Apparently, they've got 4.3 million units of the Note 7 handset that might be re-entering the market as refurbished devices.
Right. They're not going to sell them in the United States, but that doesn't mean people can't bring them into the country. And part of the reason behind doing this is that they were pressured by environmental groups and environmental activist groups to not strip them down to the components and just recycle the metals and stuff out of them.
But at the same time, couldn't you have, like, dismantled them and put all those screens in different devices or something? Like, I feel like there's a third option here, because refurb seems a little insane and a little unlikely. And, you know, E.T. video game destined for the landfill also seems like a terrible idea. So, like,
Kelly, it's like you read my mind. Seriously. So,
like, why isn't there? I feel like there's a third way here that maybe needed to be a little bit better examined, in my estimation. But that's because I don't live in a country that is not the United States, where maybe this stuff doesn't matter or is possibly less controlled. So, like, I don't know if Samsung isn't selling them here because here everyone knows they're the Samsung that caught fire, or if it's because there is a law preventing them from taking a known explosive and remarketing it later.
Right.
Like, I don't know. I don't know what that is. And so I'm not sure why they're not selling them here, but I feel like there still could have been a third way to make this better.
I think what they should have done is find a way to recycle as much as they possibly could out of these devices, and just call it good. But instead, now I'm sure that they're putting different batteries in these, because
maybe.
I hope so.
Well, I mean, can you? Yes, I hope so. I hope so.
I don't know if this is a coincidence or not, but One of Samsung's retail stores caught fire this morning in Singapore.
I shouldn't laugh.
No. Yeah, I don't want to laugh. I don't want to laugh. But
yeah, there was an article on Channel News Asia and then on App Advice talking about this shop catching fire, and you know, I guess nobody was hurt. and the fire was put out by the sprinklers, but that store is going to be closed for a while for safety reasons and cleaning. So
if I find out that's where they sent a shipment of refurb sevens.
That's where I was going. I wonder if they had Note 7s refurbished sitting around in that store.
So we're out of time, but I'm going to toss this out because we've talked about what is Samsung thinking reintroducing these phones, regardless of what they're doing to them. You've now mentioned that that Samsung store has caught fire, and of course immediately go to, hey, now we know where they're selling the Note 7s.
Right.
And when I wrote an article about this, one of my Twitter followers, Greg, he pointed out that how will you be able to tell the difference just physically looking at one of these Note 7s from the phones that were previously banned from air travel?
You won't.
This is an excellent question. What if they're still banned?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this just seems like a bad idea all the way around. And,
oh, yeah.
And my guess is that at some point, one of these phones is going to be documented catching on fire, and the Schadenfreude is going to be through the roof.
Mm.
Yep.
So this also leads me to a bunch of questions. Like, first of all, let's shut down the false equivalency that people are going to put, like, well, Apple ship stuff that blew up too. Yeah, you know what that was? It was the PowerBook 5300, which was discontinued in 1996. Your argument is invalid. Yes, the PowerBook Hibachi is a really funny punchline, but we've moved on. So the question I have, speaking of the PowerBook 5300, is what it's going to take before Samsung starts being referred to as beleaguered, number one. And number two, what's it going to take for them to just bail on the smartphone business altogether? They don't need it because their components are in enough other smartphones that, like, it wouldn't really hurt them to stop making Galaxies. And they make so much other stuff that, you know, TVs and washers and refrigerators and dishwashers and, like, every other appliance and all kinds of other sorts of technical equipment. Like, why do they want to be in cell phones if they're taking this kind of punch all the time? Like, you know, they sued Apple and lost. And then the one that was supposed to be, like, free of all of the stuff from the never-ending Apple lawsuit, like, all of that is what caught fire. So why?
All right. So
one at Samsung.
So the short version, I think, because we are kind of out of time, is Samsung won't be beleaguered. And, like,
I know.
Ever. Because they make so many things. They're in so many markets. They could stop making smartphones and tablets today, and it would have a minimal impact on their bottom line. Yeah, it just wouldn't matter. So they're in this because they like to be in all the markets, and they can absorb the losses that go along with the Explodophone. They can absorb the bad publicity because people's memories are short. So they'll just keep making phones, and odds are they're not going to have another Explodophone product for a while, and the market will just carry on.
But if you bought one of those, like, and then you go to wherever it is that you are, you know, because you're shopping for a new TV or a new refrigerator, and you go and there's a Samsung, like, how likely are you going to be to buy that refrigerator if you already had to go through the process of returning an explodey phone?
You will be far less likely. And there of course are lots of people that will do their best to never knowingly buy a Samsung product again. And and okay, great, but it's not going to have a noticeable impact on the company's bottom line because they are big.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, the Bendgate fiasco didn't hurt Apple.
Right. But in real life, that was like six people or something given, even though it had the amount of reporting that it had. So that's why, like, every single Galaxy Note 7, like, that's no small feat. And I wonder if there shouldn't be at least a conversation somebody's having at Samsung about bailing on the phone business just because of the optics of it, because they're going to be labeled as, you know, yeah, we made that exploding phone, but we don't anymore.
I think Samsung just doesn't really care. They just want to make all the things.
Yeah, and they don't need to care because they're that big.
That's true.
And they do make all the things.
Yeah, they're ginormous.
Hey, on that happy note, we're out of time. So we have to wrap up. Okay. Kelly, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. It was my pleasure to be here.
And Jeff Butts, thank you for being here as well.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Always a pleasure.
And thank you to Elgato for being our sponsor. Head over to their website, elgato.com/TDO, and check out the Eve Energy HomeKit compatible smart switch. It really is a great product. I do love mine. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.
See ya.